present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome to the only convention this week where at least someone will come up with the right answers. We begin, as always, with a cutting tonight read by old party faithful Brian Perkins.
A man who smuggled nitroglycerin into court in his underpants yesterday threatened to blow himself up after being jailed. The 23-year-old was sentenced at Reading Crown Court, Berkshire, to 4 years for an attempt to blackmail the government for £2 million. Superintendent Roy Bailey said, "We are very concerned something like this could have happened, and we shall get to the bottom of it."
And we thank Mrs. M. Robertson of Glasgow for spotting that one in the Glasgow Herald. Time to greet tonight's delegates on my right, no political bias intended, Private Eyes Richard Ingrams and the Observer's Simon Hoggart. And on my left, Alan Corran and Newsnight's Francine Stock. We open round one with this, spotted in the South Avon Mercury by Jerry Hunt of Bristol.
God's solution to world problems. Two talks and a film at the Quicksave Hall in Clevedon.
Well, Neil Kinnock might as well go home then. Richard, your question. Where did a marathon become a master race?
Is this thousands of policemen racing towards Stonehenge in order to arrest the stones?
I think it's a little further east.
A little further east, yes. Well, probably in Germany, where 10,000 German anarchists staged a marathon march against the authorities to celebrate German unity.
Yes.
Is that right?
That's absolutely so. It all concerns the ceremonies to mark the official unification of East and West Germany, which included a marathon involving thousands of East Berliners dashing across the old border. So, no change there. It was described by onlookers as the unspeakable in full pursuit of Nicholas Ridley. All of which was accompanied by the sound of street parties, church bells, and Beethoven's setting of Schiller's Ode to the IMF. Simon Hoggart, in similarly international mood, who's not paying lip service to an election promise? I think you have to go further west for this one.
Referring to President George Kinnock. Who, in
a mistake there. Mistake, Simon.
In his speech to the Labour Party conference, most of which was in French.
What are you talking about? It's absolutely crackers. Go on.
No. I was trying to get a subtle metaphorical blend here.
Failed miserably, I might add.
Thank you. Richard liked it.
I liked it.
Trying to get a kind of allegorical comparison between Neil Kinnock's pledge to increase taxes when he gets into power, and George Bush's pledge to do exactly the same, in spite of having said he'd do precisely the opposite in order to get elected.
Well, that's excellent. It's George, buddy, can you spare a few billion dimes? Bush, who reneged on campaign promises not to increase taxation in order to combat a budget deficit that barely exceeds Gerald Ronson's salary. So, starting a new game for White House journalists of reading between the lips. Of course, these days, to watch Bush's lips, you first have to get Mrs. Thatcher's bottom out of the way. Over to Brian now, or Brain, as it's written on my script. Brain of Brian.
Brian of Britain.
The Brian of Britain with this. From Mr. Jerry Pradden of Pinner.
London Transport is to give Harrow bus station a new lease of life. A spokesman said we're going to give it a major paint job in the next few weeks and are also considering a range of options, including demolishing it altogether.
And that was seen in the Pinner Observer. And we welcome Francine Stock to the programme with this question. Whose party line is waiting its calling?
And a message is coming.
You're allowed to get help on the first question.
Yeah, it's coming. A message coming from the other side, and it says, "Labour Party phone line."
Mm, he's got it.
They get 21p and of each call. That's right. Labour Party phone line, 21p goes to Labour Party funds each call.
Well answered, Francine. I couldn't understand a word you said.
Phone line, you pay, you phone this number up, an 0828 number, and you pay 44p a minute to hear Neil Kinnock talking, or for 66p a minute, you can hear him shut up.
Well, Francine, for 88p, he tells you what underwear he's wearing and what colour it is. I think they're a great party, though, they.
Two that side and one this side. One to forgotten his name now. So Simon gets a bonus, Alan gets a bonus, and Francine gets two. I don't know, just because I've been being generous. It's the Labour Party's new dialer-socialist telephone chat line, presumably to be marketed under the slogan, "Many are called, but few are chosen." They offer several services, all with an 0898 prefix, including a campaign hotline to the party brains, or Brian's. Gorgeous Glenda reveals all. One called Politics Today, a slightly warmer version of Politics Yesterday, and another to broadcast naughty Neil speeches, which, at 44 pence a minute, could wipe out Bush's deficit with a single address. However, the service will cut itself off after 30 minutes to give them time to change the policies. Alan Corrigan.
Alan,
your turn now for the bit where we dig out a piece of music nobody's ever heard of.
Well, that's the stuff they're going to play at my funeral. It says so in my will. I don't know what it's called.
Well, it's the Newsquiz signature tune, of course. And your question which follows it, Alan, where might that force the Dead Poets Society into a corner?
Oh, yes, there's going to be a media corner. It's starring Richard Dimbleby,
right.
First of all. Westminster Abbey. It'll be a long time before we get there, I should think. But they're taking up a huge area of Westminster Abbey Poets Corner, and they're going to fill it with people like... Lou Grade, to celebrate this great culture that microphones and lenses have developed. Playing the news quiz signal was a little bit hopeful. I think it'd be a long time before Ingrams and I go down that long road behind the catafalque.
It'll be Derek Jameson. You press a button and he went, "Hello, welcome to the program." I hate doing that. It makes my shirt all wet. Anyway...
The Tomb of the Unknown Wogan. The Tomb of the Unknown
Wogan. Jeremy Meadle will be buried on unhallowed ground.
Open the box.
We'd rather take the money. Dear me. What about Sooty? Hello, Sooty. I'm moving
It'll
quickly
probably
on.
Gradually fill with Dimblebys, won't it? There'll be nobody else in there. hundreds of Dimblebys. Dimbleby Corner, it'll be.
And moving quickly on, before we find ourselves prematurely in Media Corner, the scores at the end of round one are a tie at 5-5. Seems weird but fair. Round two opens with this from the Blackmore Vale magazine.
A half-mile stretch of the River Piddle has completely dried up, and the Dorset branch of the County Landowners Association is blaming the water authorities for excessive extraction coupled with the recent long dry summers. The low rate of flow in the Piddle has been concerning us for some time, said the chairman of the CLA's Water Committee, Mr. Richard Slowcock.
I'm not going to say anything about that. I'm just going to ask Richard, who hacked into the world's favourite Airbus?
Who hacked into Airbus?
Yes.
No. Can't do this one.
You know what hacking is, can you? Fraud? It's computer fraud.
Computer fraud?
You say computer fraud.
Yes. Even Corinth looking baffled.
No, Francie.
This lovely lady from the...
Francie is very unbaffled.
This Come is on. The potential fraud of British Aerospace.
Yep.
40 million. They were planning...
Yep, absolutely right.
But they got them, so they didn't do it.
Absolutely right. It refers to nine Britons and Australians who allegedly mounted a £40 million alleged computer fraud, allegedly against British Aerospace, makers of the allegedly wonderful Airbus. Anyway, well done, Francine. Simon, your question now. Whose costly inquiries will help with your phone bill? It's a simpler answer than the question, actually.
Well, could you... Start with the answer and answer by the question.
Yes, it's about British Telecom, sir.
Oh, this is a British Telecom question, yes.
Right. Well,
they're putting up the cost of making phone calls again.
That's right.
It's going to cost you even more to listen to Neil Kinnock describing what he'd like to do with your hamster.
What?
Are you on a different wavelength than I'm sorry?
I'm on a different planet tonight, Barry.
Right. It's this British Telecom's new scam, sorry, scheme, to charge 30 pence for directory inquiries while reducing your phone bill by £10. At least, I think that's what they mean. Francine, here's some music for you.
Well, you can't see electricity move along the line. How the world can you doubt it when you can see it shine? When you get salvation, the spirit you can feel. You won't have to have nobody to tell you that it's real.
Well, that was called Electricity, and it's by a group called Country Gentlemen. And Francine, your question is, which industries shocked by a universal demand for royalties?
Oh, yes, two advertising agencies had both thought of this stunningly original idea of Frankenstein being powered by electricity. And now the first agency is claiming that, I can't remember which one it is, who are doing the electricity campaign, stole their idea.
Well, it's actually the Monsters. Universal Pictures claim that they invented this. Mary Shelley doesn't get a look in, but Universal Pictures, who invented Frankenstein, say that...
I thought it was very like Norman Tebbit, that man. The advertisement. Do you think he should get a cut?
No, not Norman Tebbit's one with the bolt through his neck.
Oh! It's the electricity supply industry who now know what it's like to get a whopping great bill they hadn't expected. Helen, your question. Who greeted Romanians with bye-de-bye?
Romanians? It must be holiday camp people, is it? Mm. Romanian holiday camp. They all came over to Butlin's. Right.
Pontins.
Pontins. Pontins, my friend informs me. And somehow they came to the conclusion that Pontins was better than Romania. Wanted to stay. They've been probably given literal asylum for that judgment. We're going to let them stay here until their visas run out, and then they go back home and have a really good time.
This is the bizarre story of 76 Romanians on holiday at Pontins in Breen, Somerset, who besieged local police stations asking for political asylum to escape their tyrannically oppressive nightmare regime and return to Romania. apparently, in Romania, Heidi High means, gosh, wasn't that Ceausescu a sterling chap? Romania is not noted for its tourist industry. Most of them still think that Club 18 to 30 was the daily orders to the riot squad. That thought slowly percolating through our studio audience. Let me tell you the scores at the end of round two, which are Richard Ingrams and Simon Hogg at 7, but Alan Corran and Francine Stock in the lead with 10. Brian opens round three with this from a training manual sent in by Anne Pennyall.
Employees should not be asked to perform tasks which may be detrimental to themselves, company premises, or product quality unless they have received the appropriate training.
Richard, your question. Who revealed a viscount in shining armour?
Oh, Esther. It's Esther. Viscount in shining armour. Mm-hmm. This can't be Desmond Wilcox. Has he been given an honour? You never know these days.
You don't. No, it's not that at all. I think Francine knows.
Does she?
I was hoping against hope some did.
She can answer this in my voice then. Throwing her voice, she will tell you that Esther Ranson, wearing a parking meter warden's hat for one of her really excellent programmes about stopping poor buggers in the street and embarrassing them publicly, found Viscount Althorp. It's one of her helplines to show how charitable we all are. And she got Viscount Althorp to help an old lady into the boot of a car or something. When we got to Clapton, Granny's arm was hanging out. I often wonder about the origin of those stories, but it's something like that. I mean, there was an old lady dragging something across the street and Esther stepped in, and the bloke who helped her was Althorp.
This is Esther Ranson, the BBC's Ladies in Ratings, whose hidden camera stunt to find latter-day Good Samaritans managed to stumble upon Viscount Althorp. There was all the usual bowing and scraping, but she soon told him to stop. Esther, who only realised it was Althorp after months of painstaking research, plans to use the film in her programme Hearts of Gold, the sequel to Teeth of Limestone. Simon, listen to this.
Clown, that always picking on me?
That was Charlie Brown, sung by the Crankies. And I have written down here, serves you right. Simon, which folk heroes have reached a good old 40?
Well, it's a very humiliating moment for me, Barry, that you catch me on, because we've just had a survey at The Observer of the most popular features in the newspaper, and I've been working for that paper for 9 years. And Richard Ingram's came quite high. I came extremely low, among reasons why most people wanted to give up The Observer, but they couldn't because the newsagent kept sending it round free. But the winner, the absolute outright winner, was the Peanuts column, that Charlie Brown. It was the only reason that people buy our great newspaper. They throw the rest away, they clip out the Peanuts column, they pin it to their foreheads, they carry it around with them all day, they send it to their fiancés. It's awful. I hate it. It's the most boring, wretched, dull, tedious comic strip, and it's been going for 40 years.
The editor likes it, because it's the only columnist who's shorter than he is.
You'll notice I didn't make that joke.
No, I thought so.
And I didn't laugh at it either.
Time out now for some vital information from Brian.
Travelling by train through Wales, when a muffled announcement was made over the intercom, a passenger approached the guard and asked whether the train stopped at Machynlleth. The guard replied, "I don't know, I wasn't listening."
Well, thanks to Kate Parry of Gwynedd for sending in that one. Francine, why might learners find parking such sweet sorrow?
Oh, this is about reversing, isn't it? And I can draw you the diagram, but I'm not sure I can tell you. It goes sort of like that. And it was in the Daily Mail yesterday.
That's right.
And it was about there on the page.
That's right. Very good.
It's part of the test, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. Absolutely right. That's the bit I saw in the Telegraph about reversing. Mm. It's all about the government's driving standards agency, which from next year is to include parking in the driving test. Also planned for later inclusion are crawling around the block to avoid traffic wardens, crawling to traffic wardens when they've nicked you, and hailing a taxi to the car pound. A spokesman added that the current waiting time for a driving test was 9 weeks, the length of time it takes most learners to park outside the test centre. Or at least they're allowed to stop, which is more than some people in Twickenham are.
Folk along Park Drive are banding together in the hope of stopping learner drivers and courting couples practising manoeuvres there.
And now to finish the round, Alan, what suggests the Battle of Hastings was won by Stavros the Conqueror?
Oh, yes. Well, we knew this would come up. It's about the Bayeux Tapestry. And a Frenchman, I think it's a Frenchman, called Cencino or something like that, claims it's a fake because it shows the cooks preparing for William the Conqueror's celebration banquet doing shish kebabs, which weren't invented then. It also shows Harold, not with an arrow in his eye, being run over by a Skoda. And some doubt has therefore been cast on it by the sceptical French. But there's been lots of stuff in the papers about how it isn't a shish kebab at all, and it's all to do with the knitting and the nuns who sat there stitching it away very fast. Well, you've got to move fairly quickly when a battle's going on. It's a bugger getting your cottons right and whacking it down. Be surprised how fast an arrow travels when you're embroidering. And it's not a shish kebab at all. It's merely an ice lolly or something. But it's a stick with a thing on the end, and this Frenchman is trying to build a reputation out of spotting it. But
I thought it was a Saxon when I saw it, but however, it turns out to be a shish kebab.
What do you have to do when you go to the... Have you been to seen the Bayeux Tapestry? Yes. It's the stuff in the edge that's wonderful.
Yes.
These nuns were sewing these blokes with enormous phalluses running around. The nuns going... The little stuff along the edge, little misericordia, are wonderful. It's the filthiest piece of embroidery you'd see in a month of Sundays, and all this serious stuff going on at the top and at the bottom.
I didn't notice those, Alan.
No. Must have seen them.
Oh! It is the Bayeux Tapestry. He added smartly before we really got in the soup. The world's largest commemoration cloth, which has been denounced as an 18th century fake because it shows a cook preparing kebabs, apparently from an Anton Mossimum cookery card, while hotly pursued by an army of 11th century health inspectors. The kebab accusations come from textiles expert Robert Chancinet of St. Kylie's College, Oxford. That wouldn't be St. Kylie Minogue's College. And the scores at the end of round three are Richard and Simon 10, but Alan and Francine still well in the lead with 14. And Brian opens the last round for us.
Huge American footballers launched a flashing attack on a girl reporter who went to interview them after a game. The gridiron hunks dropped their towels in front of frightened sports writer Lisa Olson, 26, after she walked into their changing room. Lisa, who works for a Boston paper, said they were lewd, crude, and disgusting. After 8 or 10 minutes, I had to leave.
And that was sent to us by Bill Townsend of Shropshire, recently returned from Bayeux. Richard, listen to this. Called Racing Team. Richard, who's making the fastest comeback on four wheels?
Well, I think it's this racing driver, Johnny.
Yes, that's pretty 1990.
No, you'd expect me to know this sort of thing. I mean, there's a chap called Nigel Mansell.
Yes, apparently he is. I have heard of him.
Yes. Yeah, I haven't, actually.
I haven't
heard of him until just now when my colleague told me of his existence. And he's a racing driver.
That's right.
With a moustache.
That's right.
And he announced that he was... It's like Dr. Jonathan Miller, who announces every so often that he's going to retire and then doesn't. This chap did the same. He's back.
He looks exactly like that fellow Peter Mandelson, who's the Labour Party's image producer. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they're almost certainly the same person. Has that been interesting?
Sure they are.
That's jolly interesting. Francine, over to you now for an opposite view.
Peter Mandelson and Nigel Mansell discuss... Well, one's getting 7 million and the other's getting 28,000, but...
I think
apart from that, they're identical.
7 million is too much for updating the Labour Party's image.
Even if you do have a flame-proof moustache.
That's all about Nigel Mansell, the world's fastest also-ran, whose idea of retirement is to continue hurtling around most of a racetrack even faster for even more money. However, instead of Ferrari, in future he'll be retiring for Canon Williams. He turned down an offer to drive for Skoda, as it was already embarrassing enough having to stop round the course to ask the way. Simon, your question. What's the buzz about flying at 120 miles an hour?
Bees.
It's a marvellous story, because it's one of those that people who know nothing about science, like me, love, because scientists are unable to prove that a bee can fly, because it's not supposed to. Given its body bulk, it can't go up in the air. And nevertheless, these things whiz around stinging scientists, and they're all stunned by this. And they've discovered that it takes the equivalent of 30 Mars bars an hour to get a bee going. The amount of energy required to get a bee off the ground. I mean, God knows, it's probably why they settle on your Mars bars. Basically refueling during a Mansell pit stop. But this was in the Telegraph, and they have to get through 30 Mars bars in order to fly.
Dr. Charles Ellington of Cambridge compared the huge energy requirements of a bumblebee's to a human's using the Imperial Mars Bar unit.
A standard human male at rest needs about one Mars Bar every 3 hours. Jogging or manual work pushes this to one Mars Bar an hour, but the energy consumption of a flying bumblebee is 120 Mars Bars per hour.
The research, which has so far taken 2 years, now continues to discover how the creatures manage to take the wrappers off. You needn't be afraid. According to a letter in the Southampton Reporter and Guardian,
all this talk of killer bees is just plain nonsense. Have you all been watching too many Alfred Hitchcock films? Bees are basically harmless creatures. We're at far more risk from common houseflies treading poisons across our food. A bluebottle killed my aunt. She was swatting it when she fell out of the window.
Finally, Alan, who wasn't over the moon with a jumping cow? Jumping cow?
Oh, this is Gazza. Paul Gazzard. Another Gazza. He is a special policeman. He came home one night, walked into the garage, his MG was flat. A cow had fallen through the roof onto it. Can you imagine when he was filling in his insurance? You know those things you say, you know, where were you at the time of the accident? And in which direction was the other thing moving? You've got to do this diagram of a cow falling on your MG. And they have to believe you.
Absolutely right, Alan. This refers to Special Constable Paul Gazzard of Idmiston, Salisbury, whose prize MGB was flattened when a Frisian car inadvertently fell through his garage roof. Before we all fly off, let me ask the teams for their cuttings. Richard, have you brought a cutting?
Well, it's something about my old friend Prince Charles, a visit to Wales. There's some sort of community centre he's interested in. Mrs. Stewart said he seemed very interested in the community centre. And another spectator, Mrs. Linda Webben, said the prince had complimented her on her sweater, which she had made herself. Mrs. Maggie Jones and Mrs. Ethel Pritchard, both 70, also got to shake the prince.
It was probably the design on their pullovers.
Amazing.
Simon.
Mine comes from the Daily Express, Barry. It's a star Clint in killer lion alert. A man-eating lion is on the loose near film star Clint Eastwood's latest location in Zimbabwe. The rogue animal, which has killed and eaten one person and severely mauled another, is thought to have turned man-eater after losing its teeth.
Well, at least it didn't fall through anybody's roof. Francine.
Well, this is a rather yellowed cutting from The Scotsman. It has a rather sort of timeless charm, I think. It's on the very vexed subject of dogs and footpaths. And this is advice to owners. It says, many people train their dogs to use only the gutter. And recently, I have often seen parents teaching their children the same.
Well, thank you, Alan. What have you got?
Well, mine's from the Yorkshire Post. It says, for 7 hours, a man defied police from a 60-foot-high roof. Then they brought in a woman and child to help persuade him down. She called to him, come down, pet. I love you. But when the man still refused, she said, well, bloody jump then and we can all go home.
I know exactly how she feels. Let me give you the final scores, which are Richard and Simon, 12, but Alan Collin and Francine Stock, the winners with 19. Well played. And we end with a naughty tale seen in the Daily Express by Mrs. M. Charles.
Carpenter Grant Oliver was yesterday fined £80 for attacking a blow-up doll. Oliver, 25, was arrested in Torquay when he refused to stop shouting and punching the blonde sex toy in a town centre after a stage party. He pleaded guilty to threatening behaviour, but sat outside Torquay Magistrates Court. They've blown it up out of all proportion.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingram, Simon Hoggart, Francine Stock and Alan Corran. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The programme was written by John Langdon and the producer, Diane Masiris. Oh, it's fun.